afternoon. Welcome to the program. It is June the 7th. This is Hockey Central. PJ Stock joins us at the bottom of the hour. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. And Bourne, the story continues to be the Montreal Canadiens. Plenty on the Habs today. What we saw last night, what we look for this evening. In the meantime, to kick things off, how was your weekend? Was it hockey filled? Was it family filled? Was it both?
You know, it's about that time of year where you soak in some sunshine. So we spent a lot of time, and, you know, we moved recently, yes. So we have a tiny Toronto-sized backyard, but it is a backyard nonetheless, Jeff. So we spent some time on the grass running through the sprinkler with the little kids.
You know, I will tell you, before we get into the Winnipeg-Montreal situation, and we could be looking at a sweep tonight, it's not very often that that many people listening, if anybody, listening right now, can hop on the Twitter machine and see a video of their father-in-law slamming a beer can against their forehead at a New York Islanders game. But there was Clark Gillies in all of his glory. First of all, Jethro looks good.
Yeah.
He's taking care of himself, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if these two conversations run hand in hand, taking care of yourselves and crushing beers and smashing them on your head. But honestly, there is like no list of superlatives that he would not be deserving of. He is a blast. He is the life of the party. Just a really charming guy. And he knows how to fire up the team, doesn't he? He knew what the crowd wanted to see.
We'll get into Islanders talk a little bit later on, but that made me smile, and that made me laugh so richly and deeply. Seeing Clark Gillies, who was one of my favorite Islanders, and I don't think I'm in the minority on that one, doing that at the Islanders Bruins game in a series, by the way, that it really limits your career opportunities as an analyst / commentator when you say things like this. I have no idea how it's going to end up.
No.
I have no idea from game to game, from period to period. I have no idea what is going to happen in this.
Here's what I do know, Jeff.
It is so close. What do you know?
I've been betting the under, and it ain't a bad game.
Yeah, no, you're getting a little bit richer if you're betting the under on this one. Okay, Montreal Canadiens and the Winnipeg Jets. Montreal up 3 games against the Winnipeg Jets, and last night was... Geez, I don't know how you describe it. Last night, they just picked apart Winnipeg, snuffed out offense, didn't allow them to escape their zone. You saw that on the Corey Perry goal early when it was failed exit after failed exit after failed exits. Shorthanded goals, great passing between Caulfield and Suzuki. That's a combination you're going to hear for years in Montreal. 28 saves for Carey Price. How did you see game 3, Justin Bourne? Because to me, it was... pretty much clinical by the Habs.
Yeah. Like, the Jets look really bad, really bad. You know, they had a bad stretch at the end of the season where, you know, they were, I think, doubting themselves and people were doubting them. Obviously, the Oilers series, you thought they had to figure it out, but they looked like that team from the end of the year, minus Scheifele and minus DeMello. There's just not a lot going on. You know, my thing with this Montreal team is you got to score first on them. Like, they remind me of players, like low-event players where nothing happens either way. Freddie Gauthier was supposed to be that as a Leaf, and I use that as a recent example, but like Riley Nash had been that for Columbus before he came to Toronto. Yep. Like, these players where nothing happens when they're on the ice. That is Montreal. Montreal gets a lot of attempts over the course of a season, but basically, if they score first, they can make nothing happen after that. So you can't let them score first. They've been leading for like 400 straight minutes of playoff hockey because they get the first goal and then they just kind of do their thing the rest of the way.
Yeah, and the effects of that are when that game is over and you go to T-Mobile Arena and you see Vegas and Colorado, it seems like it's being played on a different planet. But back to the Montreal Canadiens, Winnipeg Jets, and you mentioned from the Winnipeg point of view, like, look, we all know about the Scheifele suspension. No DeMello, that hurts the back end. That's a separate conversation that involves, you know, players like Jamie Oleksiak, who the Winnipeg Jets tried to get at trade deadline, Ville Heinola, who management wanted to play more, the bottom pairing of Stanley and Ben, etc. But the player that I keep coming back to here, and we'll get to the Oilers conversation in a second, but the player I keep coming back to here is, this is a moment where you need Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, this is why you went out and traded Patrick Laine. You wanted to bring in another center to play behind Mark Scheifele. This is, and I don't know what happened in Columbus. I think eventually we'll all kind of figure something out we'll all sort of piece this story together probably once the season is done and people start talking more about what exactly happened in Columbus. But I do wonder if what happened in Columbus was so terrible that it totally messed up his entire season. Like, I know the quarantine was difficult for him. I get it. Come back, the injury, all of it. But isn't this a moment where, A, Winnipeg desperately needs Pierre-Luc Dubois, and B, this is where Pierre-Luc Dubois can turn around what has been a pretty mediocre season for him with his new team?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and throw myself out on a limb with this one and say that he can't turn it around. Not because this is not a player with talent or a player who won't eventually have a great season and find his game, but I had a season in my career where things off the ice were bad for me. Like kind of that age, like a bad breakup and just like a bad summer of working out that was, you know, had some off-ice issues that, anyway, I had a bad off-season and I just, there was no, I wasn't in good enough shape when I got into the season and, it made me kind of tweak some injury and I just never found my game, got in a bad place, got put, down the lineup, so now your line mates aren't as good and then your confidence goes. Like, I was never going to find it that season. I needed a whole off-season to rebuild myself mentally, physically, come back better than ever, and I did. I put in the work and I came back in college and I had a great season after I had such a terrible one. And I think that's where Dubois would be with this season, whether it's COVID, whether it's trade, whether it's all of it together. It's the season seems beyond salvation for a guy that just has no pop to him. He's just not able to bring what they need from him right now.
You see, because there's two players that that we look at last night that could be key offensive contributors for this team, and one is Paul Stastny, and I look at that and I say, man, he looks like he's still injured. Like, he looks like he's fighting through something. And I know a lot of players at this time of year are fighting through something anyhow, but I look at Stastny and I say there's something wrong physically there. I don't know that I say the same thing about Pierre-Luc Dubois at all. Like, I haven't heard anything. There's been no whispers. It just looks like, right now, to your point, he's just flat. Yeah. Like, to your point, there's no pop. There's nothing there right now. And if you're the Winnipeg Jets, that's terrifying. Which, compounding that fact is you try to figure out, how they're using a player like Nick Ehlers, who is, I think we'd be on the same page about this, their best forward going away, has been their best forward all season long, has been their MVP, all due respect, Connor Hellebuck, and he's getting the ninth most ice time of anybody on the team.
I know.
And, first unit power play rolls out, and Ehlers ain't on it.
So brutal. So brutal. I'll say, I give the coaching staffs more credit, and by staffs I include Sheldon Keefe with the way he uses Willie Nylander. I'll give them more credit than other people seem to for having watched these guys closely and assessing where they thrive and where they shrink and saying they need to play against, a matchup that isn't the top guys, and they're able to eat alive the second best line of most teams, but it doesn't happen against the best guys, so they need less minutes. Yada, yada, yada. I give them more credit than most people. End of the day, your team is getting smoked. And you got your best player playing ninth most on your team, you're doing it wrong. I don't care if they're not thriving in the minutes they play. They need to be on the ice more to make something happen. Ehlers is a great example of a guy who, don't care how you think he's best used, he's your best player right now. Play him more.
How much do you think all that old ideas that you've had all season long about Ehlers just get thrown out the window tonight? Because this is, this is cliche game, right? You always look at closeouts as cliche game. Insert your cliche. It's an easy game to do on television because there's a million cliches for this situation. How much of season wisdom, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, do you just throw out the window and say, Ehlers is going, play him a ton. More, he's used to 16 minutes. Yeah, tonight he's getting 22.
I'm totally in favor of that. The Leafs in Game 7, Willie Nylander played 22 minutes. They got to that point where they said, he's going, we're going to use him. I think it didn't work for Toronto, doesn't mean it can't for Winnipeg. So certainly they're at that point where that guy's got to be on the ice a lot for the Jets.
Yeah, I want to get back on the Montreal side of things because they really are the story here. And this is where you think, I've talked about this before with you here on the show about, A, the play of Carey Price, both physically and psychologically as well. This does happen to players where a goalie gets in your head and you feel like you always have to make the perfect shot if you're gonna beat this goaltender. And that can force you to squeeze your stick. That can, force you to get rid of the puck because you don't think you have the perfect shot. You don't play with any type of rhythm. and making it even worse. Like, there were two moments last night where I said, oh man, that is just going to be crushing for these Winnipeg Jets forwards. And it was when both Blake Wheeler and Nick Ehlers both hit the crossbar.
Yeah, when things are going bad, you don't need that, do you?
No, and it's like, I get it. Like, the goalie will say, well, what are you talking about? Like, that's not even a shot on net. That's wide. Like, that's... But just the sound... Like, Wheeler thought he scored. Yeah. Wheeler thinks, like, okay, that thing's in the net, right? And it's just, like, taking such a psychological pounding to begin with. Yeah. In this team that's just, like, snuffing you out, like, not allowing you to skate on ice. It feels like you're skating in mud. You know, like in the trenches in World War I, it's like, oh, yeah. And then this, boom.
Yeah, if you want to make me mental as a player, it's like the conversations I would have with goalies after practice. You know, you're doing the shootout drill or something and deke a goalie into the corner, then hit the post or, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't go in and the goalie takes credit for it. Man, that made me mental. It's like, you're in the corner. You're nowhere near the net. And I feel like that with, like, when goalies say, like, that's all I gave you. Certainly great shots by the Jets. And, yeah, those are the type of things where if you're a fan, you're like, if we could get one break here, kiss the other side of the post on one of these and see how it goes after we get some momentum. Whatever happens in game four, Jets got to score first. If Montreal scores first, shut the game down. Like, we don't even need to play it out.
You have a thought on the goal that kicked it all off? Corey Perry. Bieksa broke this down and talked about his little shimmy to the outside and wheeling around and getting around defensemen. Doing it all, by the way, if you missed the story, with Josh Anderson's stick. It's a CCM. He's an Easton guy. I think he's an S19 guy, but he's found some luck with Josh Anderson's stick. We'll see if he continues to use it tonight. I would suspect he would. But you have a thought on that goal specifically? Kicked it all off for Montreal?
Yeah, I do. And it's that I have an affinity for players like Corey Perry. Like, if I were building a team, I think hockey is built for lanky, squirmy, wriggly players. You know, I used to think Mark Scheifele was that when I would watch him as a junior. Like, he just was so long, and like, I was like, if that guy ever gets control of his limbs, he'll be a great player. And he has been. And Jonathan Huberdeau was like that, or just rangy. This is Perry to me. Like, he's like water. He sometimes he's able to just slither around and get through the cracks and end up where he's trying to go. No matter how hard people try. So, yeah, I as much as Perry is a pain in the butt and the worm and all that, I respect the way he plays. I should say respect the way he plays. I admire the way he plays.
16 minutes and 13 seconds of ice time last night for Corey Perry. But the play
of the game. Is he on waivers this year?
You know, listen, anybody could have had Corey Perry in the offseason, again. And it's like you come in at the bargain basement price. You know, I remember early in the season when Stewie kept going on about how much of a great signing this was, and we kind of went like, dude's not just on the back nine here, Stewie. Like, he can see the clubhouse. Like, I don't know about that, but it's paid off.
It's tough to know with Stewie. I know you're listening, but all the advocating for Kovalchuk, it's made it hard to take Stewie's veteran.
He's coming back. He's coming back.
I know.
Man,
we got him the next 4 days.
Kovalchuk's coming back. That might be what Stewie leads with come tomorrow. Get on the Kovalchuk Express. Play of the game last night. For me, it's the Caulfield pass to Suzuki.
It's a good one.
Like, there were a few moments where I'm like, okay, great big play. Like, Philip Deneau blocking the Neil Pionk shot in the third. Like, mm-hmm. That seemed like a pretty big moment for that player and for that team. But to me, like, the nicest play, I mean, the two shorties by Armia were real nice too, but Suzuki pass, man. The PK's great.
So right now the Montreal Canadiens seem like 16 skaters trying to stop the other team from scoring and Caulfield and Suzuki trying to score. Like, that's so Armia too is another guy that seems to be going and looking for things on the offensive end, but like, it's very few players to me creating a ton, but man, they're creating enough when their team defense is so good. But yeah, that the PK, David Amber's been all over the stat that through 31 penalty kills this year in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Montreal's PK has 4 goals and has given up 3. They're plus. They're plus when they're shorthanded. How do you beat that?
I'll tell you what. I want to make a quick point here about Nick Suzuki as well. In him, and maybe I was biased to this after watching him play in Owen Sound, wearing the number 37 in honor of his favorite hockey player, Patrice Bergeron. Do you not see like a mini Bergeron
Yeah.
And Nick Suzuki.
I love
like,
to Suzuki's me,
like,
awesome.
100%. Like, it's a combination of, like, Mini Bergeron, Ryan O'Reilly. Now, he works out with O'Reilly in Joey Hischen's camp in Stratford in the offseason. So, and I know they work out a lot together on the ice. But it seems like that's a guy. Like, when you look at the future of the Selke Trophy, like, it's, you know, Bergeron dominates it, obviously. You know, you have your Couturier's in there. Dunno should slip in there as well. Ryan O'Reilly, etc. But you look at that next wave of players that we'll be talking about for the Selke. Joel Eriksson-Ek has distinguished himself now. You know, I think that, you know, Bo Horvat will probably work his way into that conversation. But I see Nick Suzuki, like, right in that. And that's a tough one. Like, you have to do a lot of years. You have to play a lot of years of good defensive hockey to get in the self,
which is dumb, right?
Selke conversation. It totally is. You know, like, there have been times where I've looked at, like, Nico Hischier on New Jersey and gone, like, man, like, people need to pay attention to how good this guy's complete game is. But
the analytics community will tell you Zach Aston-Reese was one of the best defensive players in the league last year. It's like, he's not going to win the Selke. That's just, it doesn't happen that way. Unfortunately, for that award, and right or wrong, that's not how it happens. You have to have some pedigree at it for a while to prove it's real and not a one-year flash.
I just think that Suzuki's looking like the next great Selke candidate out there.
I hadn't thought of everything.
Like, detail, but, detail, detail. Like, what Stewie always talks about.
Well, you know what strikes me is he exists within the play, if that makes sense, as opposed to some guys who exist around the play, on the outside of the play. Like, from within it, he's able to create and see things, and he seems to know which side of the pile to be on all the time. Good vision. You know, he's a hockey player. He's a hockey player, and there's not an angle of it where you're like, well, Suzuki can't do that. Like, maybe he's not one of the best offensive players right now in the league, but he could get there. And same with defense. He could get there. Everything he does, you could say, like, yeah, I could see how Bergeron is, you know, within his grasp is a comparable eventually for what he could be, because he exists within the play like Bergeron in such an effective way.
Be in the play, not of the play. Snatch the grasshopper. Snatch the pebble, grasshopper. Only then may you leave the temple. It's my nickel and dime, Kwai Chang Kang. Love Kung
Fu. Really
good. Really. What do you expect tonight? I mean, tonight could be closeout, could be Handshake Alley, could be Surprise Alley here. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, I am... This is... I don't know, maybe a gambler's perspective, but, like, you know, the old dead cat bounce is kind of real sometimes. Like, a team that just has pride and has guys like Blake Wheeler in the lineup and Paul Stastny and, you know, guys who have been around and aren't just going to stop playing. They know you don't get too many shots at this, and I think you could sell your teammates on the Montreal Canadiens not being, as much as we've used this word thanks to Chris Johnson, they're not a juggernaut. You know, they were the 16th best team in the regular season heading into playoffs. This is a team that you go get one win and start there. Then you go into the Bell Center and see if you can get one there, and all of a sudden you go, all right, are we on to something here a little bit? You start with one. I think you could sell the team or making a push. So I think you'll get some bounce back from Winnipeg tonight. Believe it or not, I am going to bet them in Montreal.
You are betting Winnipeg tonight?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Well, you know, it gets easier if this Jeff Petrie situation. Now, I haven't seen an update since we went on the air at noon Eastern here. Jeff Petrie's hand injury. I don't know if it's a hand, if it's just a finger, if it's his pinky finger. Who knows?
But it got caught in the photo hole. Did Elliot tweet?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. They captured. They found the moment on video last night as part of the game, and it looks like his now that happened, by the way, that happened earlier on this year in the American League. Cameron Gauntz, playing for the Ontario Reign of the AHL, he got his hand caught where in the glass where the door opens for the visitors to come on the ice. So he's coming around the net and he's got his hand off his stick, and he's sort of, I think, bracing himself against the boards, and his hand got stuck there. And yeah, messed up his hand. And he played through it, and he essentially became like a one-handed defenseman. Like, first of all, you can't shoot. Second of all, your passes aren't as crisp, and you can't push anyone. So you really become limited. Now, that is perhaps not a worst-case scenario, but a pretty bad scenario for Jeff Petrie. Elliot and I talked about this on the podcast last night. Maybe it's just like a pinky finger and you tape it to the next finger, like to the ring finger. I don't know. And you make it easier to function.
You got one finger along in the NHL, they'll freeze you up. If you don't play with a hurt finger in hockey, what are you doing? You're in the wrong sport. By the way, I would just like to say, I know I had the buildings messed up when I talked about Winnipeg. They're in Montreal tonight. So
in Montreal tonight, Bell Center, yeah.
Yeah, so then they'll go back to Winnipeg after that, yada, yada. But yes, no, if it is just a finger, he's going to be in the hockey game, but maybe not at his best.
More on Montreal here with PJ Stock in a couple of moments. Meanwhile, how do you describe it, what Vegas is doing to Colorado right now? Right off the opening face-off. Right off the opening face-off. Like, there's a pace that Vegas sets, like a tempo, that Vegas sets, and Colorado tries to match it, and they can kind of hang with them for a while, and then they just get overwhelmed. It's like someone just dragged you into the deep end of the pool and said, let's see who can tread water the longest. And that's what Vegas is doing to Colorado right now.
It's wild watching like Riley Smith hook up with Jonathan Marchessault and be like, didn't they both play for Florida? What happened here? Wasn't that a thing?
They've been there since day one, and they've been great together.
Unbelievable.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Marchessault is such a passionate player. I love watching him play. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, Vegas's biggest strength to me is that they're just such a team. Like, they don't throw anyone over the boards that I'm like, here comes a liability. Like, they just seem to be able to sustain that pressure. Like, sometimes you have a great team that'll get out there and put that pressure on that you were talking about. Oh, here comes the great line, great offensive zone shift. And then, like, it kind of dials back as they go through their four lines. Vegas can keep that pedal down for a long time. And Colorado's being challenged. I feel like this is, you know, a team that a lot of the talent is on the top of their lineup, and they're going to be challenged all the way through to maintain through 60 minutes of Vegas.
You know what was interesting? We've talked a lot about what fans have meant, and it's sort of hard to quantify. Like, you can't really point to one thing and say, yeah, that's because of the fans. Like, I understand that, you know, when it's loud, it's hard to communicate, and that's very much a thing, especially for defenders. But there was a moment in the game yesterday that I looked at and I said, that is a complete byproduct of there being 18,000 fans at T-Mobile Arena. So the first Marchessault goal. So they thought they had a goal in the first case. They didn't. The puck squirts to the corner and they end up scoring again. If you watch the replay, because the fans react like it's a goal and they go banana sandwich. Nemeth and Grubauer stop playing.
I know exactly where you're going. Sorry to cut you off.
They stop playing. Like, yeah. Grubauer is standing, just sort of looking around like Joe Dog, and just like, okay, well, what's going on here? We're going to the center ice now, right? Yeah. They just completely stop playing because they reacted to the fans. That's where I looked at that and I said, I wonder if it's an empty rink, do Grubauer and Nemeth stop playing?
It's a great thought. I doubt they do.
No, I'd be willing to say that they don't stop playing, and they stay right with the play. But that's
points, Vegas fans.
Points
and assist. I totally agree.
On Marchessault's third goal of the playoffs, assist T-Mobile Arena.
To Negreanu. I see you, Daniel. Give it to him. Give him the assist. No, truly, I don't think that goal happens if the crowd doesn't make them kind of pull up a little bit. But then also, in the spirit of what I'm talking about, like for 60 minutes, they give you that energy to keep it up. You know, there is no intrinsic motivation necessary when it is coming at you and they're, you know, bringing that energy to you. It's able to keep your level up all through the hockey game. I am flabbergasted that the Colorado Avalanche have looked how they did. I tweeted a graph from this morning. Shot attempts at all strengths. So in every hockey game this season, they were dominant this year. Only two, three games were in the negative on that. Their two worst performances in that regard were in the last two games in Vegas, where they have been filled all the way in. Basically filled in since after the fourth period of this series. So, boy, what do they have? Do they have that answer back? A lot of us had them penciled in for the Stanley Cup. Now it's like, oh, okay, what happens when you get pushed?
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea here. It does very much when you look at it, because both teams have held serve. You won your home games. It does have that. You know, there are some series that you look at going into it and you say, okay, this is a series that the first team to win on the road is going to win the series. That's just the way you look at it, and that's just the way it feels. Even though Colorado doesn't have to do that, doesn't the series sort of have that feel?
You know, I wrote something half snide in one of my articles about I generally don't like that theory that, like, the series doesn't start until you went on the road. So, yes, it does. If you're up 2-0, it has started. You're in a good spot. But in this series, I totally get what you mean. Like, you win one on the road, it's like a break in tennis, you know, where all of a sudden it feels like a huge swing has happened. And that would be big here for sure. You know, it really does get lost in when we talk about the NHL, what going to play at altitude does to a player. And I know that Colorado has to play on the road, and maybe they don't have the same sort of tolerance for the altitude at all times. But, like, going to play there in college, God, I was bad. Just dragging. And maybe it was just me. Maybe I suck. But, like, I really felt it. So, like, going into Colorado after that, I don't know if they have any advantage, or I haven't even looked at their home record. I wonder if that doesn't play into it a bit. Not to mention, you know, we saw Vegas look so bad there in games 1 and 2 coming off a 7-game series, already tired and at altitude. I bet it had something to do with why they looked so bad in the first 2 games.
You know, it's interesting. I got a text from someone after game 2 with the Vegas organization who and they're down 2-0 going back to Vegas. And the text was just, we are 100% confident we are going to win this series. Like, this series,
what?
This series is over. We're going to win it. And they were down 2-0.
Hmm.
Yep.
Seeing something we weren't, like, huh?
Well, I mean, seeing, feeling. I mean, you look at that game 2. I mean, that was the Philip Grubauer story. Kept him in there big time as whatever happened, Vegas found their legs. I'm curious to see if they, I mean, how long, I don't know if this sounds right or wrong, but I wonder how long can you play like this? Like, that is an insane pace that Vegas is playing at right now. Can you do that if this thing goes 7?
I don't know, but you know what I love that one of the 3 best hockey players in the sport, in Nathan MacKinnon, you know, is about to be asked the question, can you be the guy to drag your team through when it gets hot and the other team is pushing you? Because, like, McDavid didn't have a chance. You know, they got swept. As good as he was, like, there just wasn't enough around him. But, like, Matthews, when the pressure was ramped up here in Montreal, wasn't able to get there for his club. Like, it's hard to drag a hockey team through. Like, is MacKinnon that guy to do it? If he is,
Crosby.
Yeah. And if he is, Jeff, does that change how we talk about the best players in the sport?
It's a great question. It really, really is. I don't know. I don't want to.
If he drags them through Vegas and they win a cup, like, are there people who saying he's better than McDavid? Yep.
Yes, there are.
I mean, there's people saying it now, but
if MacKinnon can snap this team back to attention. Oh, really quick before we get to BJ, what did you make of Bednar calling out his top guys after Game 3?
Well, like, they've just
won 6 games in a row.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's important when there are tangible results to back up your point, then what, you know, the players can't have hurt feelings. They sucked. Like, you know, MacKinnon's line went head-to-head against the Stevenson line of Vegas and were outshot 15-0 at 5-on-5. 15-0. So when your coach goes out and says you were no good, you don't get to be upset because you were no good. So I think it's a lot easier, you know, in Toronto here, the comparison has been made with the top guys, and, you know, should Sheldon Keefe have been harder on them? We talked about that on Good Show this morning in that series. You know, they at least had a case that they were close to scoring goals, you know, but still, I don't have a problem with it when there's evidence to back up your point.
I'll tell you what, one final thing here, and we'll get to break and get to PJ Stock. One of the things that Gary Galli mentioned last night on the broadcast, him and John Bartlett, was look at the amount of times that Colorado would enter the zone and almost immediately the puck would turn around and go the other way because they just shut down all lanes, snuffed out anything offensive. You know, the puck died on how many Avalanche player sticks, and the puck got out quickly. Like, Vegas got out of their zone easily.
Isn't that what they wanted to do with this Pietrangelo acquisition? Like, they wanted to be a team that didn't have to play there and got it going the other way, and here they are. And it's worked out for them the last couple games. That it's a big key to slowing down great offenses is just, you know, when they do bobble the puck, get it going the other way. You don't want to give them second and third chances to sustain ozone possession.
They look good, as does Montreal. We're getting back on their page here. They could close out tonight and sweep the Winnipeg Jets at the Bell Center. Can you imagine what it would be like in Montreal on that patio, by the way, outside the Bell Center, which looks so fantastic? Let's get to PJ Stock here. Hit a break. Count Stockula joins us in a couple of moments. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're talking Habs and Jets. Game 4 tonight. Next. Hey, Justin Bourne, here's a question. This comes to us from one of our favorites, Dale Hunter's Helmet. So is Corey Perry now this generation's Glenn Anderson?
You think so? I guess.
it's a question. Like, hey, never mind the regular season. Let's just show up in playoffs when it counts. Let's ask PJ Stock that, who joins us now. Stockosaurus, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm actually, not going to lie, little hungover, and I have a reason for it. I went in yesterday into my day. It was a beautiful day in Montreal. It was sunny. It was awesome. I was at the cottage, and I'm getting ready to watch the hockey game last night, and I pour myself a little drink, and what happened to the Winnipeg Jets? Like, I had to pour myself. I'm like, something's up. I had to pour another one. I thought that was the solution. It was not the solution. But I'm thinking to myself, maybe they were drinking. So I don't know what's been going on.
Yeah.
But it's been just, last night. Like, go ahead.
There's a few things, there. I don't think anyone's ever drank themselves smarter, but good for you for trying. Good for you trying to figure that out. Second of all, there's a lot of things to go over here with Montreal. But I want to throw this question out at you. Marc Bergevin used to always have, and he still does, has the quote about there are players that get you there and players that get you through. One of our regular tweeters, Dale Hunter's Helmet, says, so is Corey Perry now this generation's Glenn Anderson? Anderson was sort of notorious for, here or there during the regular season, but playoffs show up and this guy is a star. Is Corey Perry now officially that guy?
I think, going off last year's run with Dallas and what's going on this year, my thing is he plays this way all the time. It's just that the rules allow it to, for his style. He's a clutcher, he's a grabber, he's not the fastest skater in the world. So he is on the little hooks and the hand grabs and the driving the front of the net. And during the season, he plays the same way. It's just not the same results because the games are that much quicker, and that's why everyone thinks that, well, he looks slow out there. But once the game starts to slow down and you can kind of rugby it up a little, that's where he excels. And it's so funny, we're talking about Corey Perry, but no one in the league wanted him this summer, pretty much. He signed for $750,000, and the Canadians actually brought him in because of, it was going to be a year with COVID, so we needed depth. Because who knows if guys are going to get sick. He needed a taxi squad. He wasn't even on the team to start the year. He was on that taxi squad. His line, I'm going to compliment. It's hard not to compliment the entire line, though. Eric Staal is the Buffalo. That was a disaster. Comes here. They got him, again, just as insurance. And Armia wasn't even going to be in the Canadiens' plans moving forward. And the three of them as a line, obviously Carey is most successful right now, but it is amazing to watch and fun to watch. And now the question was, you're talking about Glenn Anderson or comparing him to, Carey might have been retired after the season. If you're a hockey team, do you kind of think of, okay, however this year ends, Corey Perry looking for a job next year, do you just sign him potentially for the playoffs of next year?
Yeah, certainly an option. Hey, PJ, how much do you think that this run by the Canadiens is validation for all that Marc Bergevin has done this season? I know there's a lot of, for me, it's like, the Jets are pretty soft. They did get a playoff win, but he's been making the case. This is a team built for playoffs, and they're winning here. So is it validation or a matter of circumstance that things have gone so well?
Combo. If you guys remember, let's not forget the first four games against Toronto. Right. They won game one, but again, we talked about, the injury to Tavares. Like, we're been there for three games. They were just horrendous. This is so bad. And this is where I'm talking about, are they this good, or is something happened in that Winnipeg locker room that just there's no compete? Like, there's no compete. I was so frustrated last night just saying to myself, like, there's guys that, you know, this is what playoffs hockey is all about. We're talking about Corey Perry. We're talking about Ericsson. We're talking about, you know, all these guys in the back end blocking shots and Carey Price. And this is what your reputation is made on. And here you have the Winnipeg guys, just so many guys. The one thing you have to do against the Canadians is get in front of Carey Price. Not what Corey Perry is doing exactly the hell of a, and everyone is. No one's doing it to Carey Price. He is their best player by a mile, and no one's touched him. Spray some still snow on him. I don't care. I know it's old school, but Corey Perry's doing it. Why isn't anyone in Winnipeg doing that to the Montreal Canadiens? It's very frustrating.
I thought about that after it got to 4-1 last night. I was wondering, okay, if you're the Winnipeg Jets at this point, you're thinking about game four. And no one's talking about taking a run at Carey Price. This isn't like old school, like, okay, yeah, we're going to dust the goalie. But something. Anything. Like, you know, take a swipe at him when he's covering the puck. Anything. Nothing. Like, there's like a force shield around Carey Price right now. I don't know. I can't figure it out, PJ.
You just see Anderson, at least. Yes, you know, they're not even meaning to do it, but they're just competing and going to the net. Anderson hasn't been spectacular in the series, but he drives to the net yesterday and slash on, you know, it was late, whatever it was. But you need those little things like that.
That's it's okay. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. It frustrates them just a little bit enough. And I think it was last night you guys on your on Sportsnet put out a clip from Hellebuck talking about Perry about it was something what happened during the year about him getting elbowed. And he's just you know how it can frustrate your own goalie. How are you not doing it to the other team's goalie? And there's so many of them. I don't know what I have a question for you two, both of you guys.
Okay.
Is this And do you think this has to do with the Shifley situation at all? Like, do you think there was something in that lock? Is it the Shifley? Is it the way the team's handling it? Is it this team shut down McDavid and Edmonton? And I know it's different, but
it's a great question. I mean, it seems to me that the Jets are a team without a ton of tools, and Shifley's such an important one that, like, gosh, they just feel toothless right now. One of the ways they look toothless is on their power play, where, you know, Montreal's PK scores two more last night. Tell us about Montreal's PK in general. In the playoffs, PJ, they're plus one in terms of goals allowed. What's going on there?
So, and Toronto series too. You got. I think the one problem is, and we all can look at Winnipeg, is they don't have a quarterback. Now, you know, Morrissey's on the back end. They don't have a quarterback. You know, we flip switches, and then you watch the Vegas Colorado game after, and you know, whether it's McCarr, Petrangelo, whoever you want to talk on the back end, it's so fun to watch how they walk the blue line, how they create opportunities for everybody else on the ice. They can shoot. No, there's no one like that. It's one of the issues with the Montreal power play. A little Petrie kind of is a little bit that guy. Weber has the shot, but they don't really have anybody else. But at least they put forwards in those positions. They tried with Jonathan Dwayne throughout the year. They tried a bunch of different options. I don't think Winnipeg has the quarterback, and I don't think they have enough right now. This is crazy, but you're right. The hole that Shifley leaves in that power play. They don't, you know, that threat that, you know, you change it, you have to respect his pass, yes, because he's such a great passer, you have to respect his shot because it's a real great shot. So that's where you find that odd man. You know, someone's going to overcheat to cover up one of those things and hopefully hit that other person. He makes all those right decisions. There's no one making right decisions. Like, the entire power play, penalty kill, the Winnipeg Jets right now. And I don't. Oh, do you blame the captain? Because I haven't seen Wheeler at all. Do you blame the coach? Because this is game after game after game. I don't know.
You know what? A lot of it comes down to for me, PJ. Okay, so Shifley's out. You know, in the playoffs, you have and every successful team has a next man up attitude.
Yep.
To me, this is right now, and there's a lot of reasons you can point at for the awful season, and we'll call it awful because by his standards, it is. To me, the question is, where is Pierre-Luc Dubois?
Oh yeah.
To me, that's the big one. It's like, okay, you lose Scheifele. All right, I got it. That's tough. You lose Dylan DeMello. That's tough too. So your depth is starting to get challenged here. So who is the guy to step into that place? Is that not why they got Pierre-Luc Dubois for that great run 1-2 up the gut? Like you look at some of the other great 1-2s around the NHL, and Crosby Malkin comes to mind right away as, you know, one of the best example. I mean, how many times have you seen Crosby injured and Malkin goes into next level and vice versa? That's not happening here at all. Quite the opposite.
He's another one that's just too inconsistent. And I know, you know, Cassie tried to give him some love the other night, and Kelly, and it's just we know he has to be important. So we're finding little glimpses of it. It's got to be consistent. It's just not consistent. I look back at that trade. You know, so many trades happen for so many reasons. I was traded because other teams wanted me. That's what was in my situation. But a lot of times are, you know, problem for problem, or, you know, we got to change. I don't know who won that trade. I don't know.
Nobody.
Do they both lose?
Two trade losers.
You know, hang on a second here. Let's just as a quick aside, because this is one of the more fascinating trades that we've seen all season long. You know what that trade right now looks like? That trade right now, based on results, isn't the Laine trade, isn't the Dubois trade, it's the Jack Roslovic trade. You know who looks the best in that trade? Jack Roslovic looks
the best. No, all the coaches and managers who traded those guys look the best because they're validated. They're like, look, there's nothing here from this guy. What are we supposed to do? These guys can't get anything out of him either.
So, and you look at, you know, especially we're talking about playoffs and the dream of, sorry, I left out some of the reasons why I was frustrated. I also watched that Mayweather, Jake Paul or whatever, Logan Paul.
Oh, 50 bucks for that?
Well, that added, no, a friend of mine sent me so I'm just adding to my frustrated night. This is what I'm saying. This is what added to my everything. I wasn't finished at the beginning. I started going, that's why I had to have a drink. I went from Winnipeg to Jake Paul or Logan Paul.
Logan Paul.
It was, so that was my night. And so but Logan Paul is talking about, you know, this is what dreams are all about. Anyone, if you put the effort into it, you know, he's just whatever going down this path. I know it's so bad. But that's saying to myself, that's kind of like those Rocky moments, those you know, those sport moments that you look back on. And this is what playoff hockey is all about for me. We started off by talking about Corey Perry. You know, this is those playoff heroic moments. And to lay an egg the way the Winnipeg Jets have done in the last couple games, and the guys that only have, you know, Lowry's out there giving it, but a Dubois who has the work ethic and the talent, and if he puts that work ethic with that talent, he's one of the best, Jeff, as you just said, in the league, 1-2 punches. Where is that? How frustrating is that if you're an organization, if you're a teammate? It's really frustrating. This is a tough one. Is it over tonight? Like, is it done? Is that all
feels
we got
like it?
From?
Feels like it. Although Borny's got his money on Manitoba here.
Well, for the dead cat bounce, as I put it, I think there'll be this push here, one attempt at it. But like, so it all comes back to, no one can get anything on this Montreal team right now. Like, none of the offensive guys can do much. So shouldn't we be heaping some praise on Weber and Sherratt and Petrie and Edmondson and those guys for keeping things so quiet? Even the mentions of no one snowing Carey Price, like, part of that is those guys are kind of there playing gatekeeper, are they not?
We got 60 seconds, Petrie. We got 60 seconds.
And Deno, let's give that line of some love. You know, they bring in Lehkonen. Lehkonen looks great. You know, we're not talking about the superstars in Winnipeg because of, well, you know, they're being shut down. Oh, I think it's the lack of effort at times because I'm not seeing that push, but let's give credit where credit is due. The Montreal Canadiens for the last six games have been firing on all cylinders, and it's fun to watch if you're a Habs fan. So,
you know, that's a great point about Deneau as we go to break here, PJ. That block shot, I don't know whether it was 4-1 or 5-1 at that point, but the game's like there's Montreal is winning this game. It's a foregone conclusion, and he's out there blocking the shot. And listen, you played in the NHL. You know what that does up and down the bench for a player like him. All right, Peach, a couple of Advils, a nice tall glass of ice water. Enjoy your afternoon, and we look forward to game four tonight, bud.
Ciao, buddy. Great talking to you.
Thanks, PJ. The great PJ Stock, who joins us here on Hockey Central. I want to play a clip for you from Barry Trotz after the break.
I love
the coach games in playoffs. Coaches trying to draw attention to things that may help facilitate a win for their squad. Head coach of the Islanders at it with the head games against the Boston Bruins. We'll play the clip here in a couple of moments. As Hockey Central continues, a couple of big games tonight. Islanders-Boston could be closed out in Montreal. It's the Habs and the Jets. More on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan in a moment. Looking for the advantage. Game 5 tonight, Islanders-Boston Bruins. Borny, you'll like this one. Here's Islanders head coach Barry Trotz trying to gain some.
Well, I think, Bergie's been he's a really good face-off guy. One of the best. I think Pager and guys like Zajac, Brock, they all study what he does. And yeah, the biggest thing with Bergie and really linesman can control this. He doesn't like to get a stick down, so he's got to come to a stop. And then you have a fair fight. And so he's a veteran guy who knows how to cheat on the faceoffs. And I'm relying on our very capable officiating crew and linesmen to make sure that the cheating doesn't go on because he's good at it. And all the veteran guys are. He's not the only one. Trust me. But he's very good, and he's very capable, and he's been a top centerman and a faceoff guy for a long time.
Put a frame around that,
oh,
Borny.
Art.
That was art.
My gosh.
A cheater, but boy, we have some great linesmen in this game.
You can't do it any better than that. He insulted no one while calling a guy a cheater. It was unbelievable. His press conferences are must watch. He also said that, like, you know, Komarov and Barzal, he's like, yeah, you guys can all play fantasy hockey here. We're trying to build a hockey club. I love Trotz quotes.
I know. I'll take Barry Trotz all day long. Boy, he's one of my favorites, and I know he's one of yours as well. Tonight, it is Islanders and Boston Bruins, and also the Winnipeg Jets facing elimination against the Habs. Islanders Bruins goes 6:30 this evening, 8 o'clock Eastern. We could see Handshake Alley between the Habs and the Jets. A sweep? Really?